people of Montana, for the consideration you have always shown me over the years. I am grateful to you for your many kindnesses to Mrs. Mansfield and me during this and previous campaigns. To my old-time friends in western Montana, whom I may not have seen this year, I want to express the hope that you will understand, forgive, and hold a rain check for me. In traveling over Montana's 148,000 square miles, I have tried to see as many of you as I could. I wanted to be more aware of your problems and to have the benefit of your advice and counsel so that as a result, I could represent you better. My entire record and my personal background has been placed before you over the past 10 years because everything I have done has been above board and for all to see. Being human, I have made mistakes, and my record, while not perfect, is a good one, and I'm proud of it. In this campaign, as in previous ones, I shall not degrade the office I hold or the office I seek by indulging in personalities, slogans, or emotional appeals. I will, however, during the course of these broadcasts, and there will be three more at this time on the following three Mondays, answer the false statements now being made about me. At this time, I will only ask you what my opponent has done to develop Montana and its resources, what he has done to ensure our country's security, and what he has done in the cause of world peace. On what basis does he request you, the people of Montana, to return him to the Senate? Tonight I am going to talk about Montana and my record, because it is important to me that I tell you what has been done for our state since I've been your congressman. I think you are entitled to know the truth, not to make you free because you are free, but to keep you free. The election of Mike Mansfield is far less important than the safety of our country and the building up of our state. Montana is an empire within itself. As I rode and flew over its majestic beauties, and I've traveled approximately 30,000 miles in this campaign, I was impressed more than ever by its potentialities. I saw the great oil development in the Williston Basin of eastern Montana, a development which in 10 years' time will exceed anything Texas has ever known. I saw the great agricultural areas, and I became aware once again of how basic the rancher is to our economy. I visited the manganese and tungsten areas of Granite, Silver Bow, and Beaverhead counties, the forests of western Montana, and the copper mines in Butte. I visited the Hungry Horse, the Libby, the Canyon Ferry, and the Tiber projects. And I met, talked, worshipped, and ate with the most important resource we have, the people of our state. What does Montana mean to its people? It means opportunity and security. It means hope and prosperity. It means life and happiness. It means all these things to me, too. I have watched too many of our youngsters leave this state because they said there were no opportunities here. The opportunities, the resources were here, but they were lying dormant and undeveloped. That is one reason why, when you sent me to Congress 10 years ago, I said I would do everything in my power to develop our state, and I have. A start has been made in developing the tremendous water resources which we have in such abundance. In the 10 western Montana-Columbia Basin counties, we have 10% of the hydroelectric potential in the entire United States, or roughly 10 million kilowatts of power. We have Hungry Horse on the verge of completion, and Libby Dam has been authorized and some preliminary work is now being done. Hungry Horse will furnish 300,000 kilowatts of power in Montana. And Libby, when completed, will furnish in excess of 600,000 kilowatts of power in our state. Canyon Ferry near Helena will be completed soon, and another 50,000 kilowatts of power will be added. I want to see Moorhead and Yellowtail dams developed because Moorhead will put 65,000 acres in Powder River County under cultivation, and Yellowtail will furnish an additional 200,000 kilowatts of power for use in southeastern Montana. Tiber Dam is now under construction. All these projects are fully repayable, and they represent an investment in our state. And all of them mean new industry, a broader tax base, new jobs, more security for us, and a future for our children. Then there is the matter of rural electrification. In the state of Montana, only 74% of our farms are electrified, compared to 85%, which is the national average. While this is a great deal above the 5% of our farms electrified in 1935, it indicates that much more work needs to be done if we are to expand our over 18,000 miles of rural lines to approximate the achievements of the country as a whole. America's farm families know and appreciate the value of rural electrification, for perhaps no single program of the many worthwhile and beneficial programs undertaken by this country has directly benefited the farmer more. The farmer who now grinds his feed with electric power, waters his cattle, and irrigates his land by electrically driven pumps does not have to be sold on the value of REA. The farmer's wife who does her family's laundry in a modern washing machine, prepares their meals on a clean, efficient electric stove, keeps their food and milk fresh and wholesome in an electric refrigerator, or fills a deep freezer with vegetables and fruit fresh from her garden, does not have to be sold on the value of REA. The local REA cooperatives are farmer-owned and farmer-operated. They are successful businesses. They are getting electricity to the farms at reasonable rates. In Montana, REA is a going business and is benefiting other businesses as well as the farm families they serve. Let us not forget that Free Enterprise builds the REA lines, every mile of them. Free Enterprise has built the $30 million worth of lines erected in Montana. Let us see what happens when the enterprising and pioneer farmers of Montana invest over $30 million in better living. First, the work of building the power lines goes to the contractor who submits the low bid, Private Enterprise. Who supplies the poles, the conductors, the insulators, and the 100 other items needed to erect a power transmission line? Private Enterprise. Who pays the worker for his services? Private Enterprise. And not one of these could have shared in the $30 million which Montana's ranchers were willing to invest had it not been for REA. And as a result, Private Enterprise in our state has benefited by that amount. Over 30,000 consumers have been connected to REA lines in Montana. Again, they have benefited because of REA. The state is that much richer because of this investment. Does this seem unfair to Private Enterprise? Do not forget that this is new business, business that would not have existed without REA. It was territory that no one had sought to serve until REA filled the vital need. My goal is to see every farm home in Montana have access to electricity at rates they can afford to pay. The goal is almost in sight, and I will continue to fight for the REA until it is achieved. In addition to the REA program, Congress in 1949 authorized REA to undertake a rural telephone loan program to meet the great need of rural people for adequate telephone service. Some progress is now being made in this respect in Montana, and I am indeed happy to have voted for these great programs which mean so much to our people, on whom we depend to such a great extent. Where does my opponent stand on all these things which I have been discussing with you? Just what is his stand on REA and transmission lines? I think he should tell you where he stands on Montana and its future. Don't you? There was a group of flying Republican senators in the state of Montana some days ago, and in their talk at Kalispell they brought out the fact that the Republican 80th Congress had appropriated something like $14 million, I believe, for Hungry Horse Dam. What they said was true. But I think you ought to know the story, the real story behind the story they told the people of the Flathead Valley. As a matter of fact, Mike Kerwin, the present chairman of the Interior Appropriations Subcommittee, who was at the Hungry Horse dedication and who did far more than anyone else in Washington to get our program in the Flathead going, Mike Kerwin, at the time the 80th Congress took over, was the ranking minority member. He went to the Republican chairman of that subcommittee, a colleague of his from the state of Ohio, and he said to his colleague, "I'm going to ask one favor of you." His colleague, the chairman, said, "Fine, anything you want, Mike." Mike said, "I want you to grant the full amount for the Hungry Horse Dam." After a cuss word or so, the chairman of the subcommittee said, "That was the one project that I was going to cut out completely this year." But he added, "I'll tell you what I'll do on the basis of personal friendship and because it's the only request you have made of me. I'll go for half of the budget request." And that, folks, and I hope you folks in the Flathead are listening, is the real story of how the Republican Congress gave us an appropriation when they came in control, when what the chairman really wanted to do was to knock out Hungry Horse altogether. Incidentally, that same committee cut Bonneville appropriation so badly that they had to approve a supplemental appropriation for a far larger amount later in the year. I am for the Hoover Plan, except as it affects veterans' hospitalization. My opponent says he's for the Hoover Plan, but he voted against taking Internal Revenue collectors, customs collectors, and postmasters out of the field of political appointments. I am for this, and I have introduced bills in the last three Congresses in the past 6 years to take away from congressmen the right to recommend postmasters and rural mail carriers. Incidentally, these are the only jobs. I have none on OPS or any other agency that I have as a congressman at my disposal. But I want them put under civil service. And I want the people working in the post office department to be considered on the basis of fitness to perform their duties. In addition to introducing a bill for taking postmasters and rural carriers off the patronage list, I have introduced the following measures in this and previous Congresses. One, a bill to revise the federal election laws to stop abuses and wild spending of money in campaigns. Two, a bill to alleviate the freight car shortage, which until this fall worked a tremendous hardship on our farmers and millers. Three, a bill to provide a clearinghouse in the Department of Justice to pass on the qualifications of government contractors. Four, a bill to fix the personnel strength of the Marine Corps and put the commandant on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This bill passed, and the Marine Corps now has 3 divisions and 3 air wings, and the commandant is where he belongs, on the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Five, a bill to create the Smaller Defense Plants Corporation to help small business. That bill passed too. Six, a bill to outlaw the Communist Party. Seven, a bill to make it mandatory for members of Congress to report all outside income every year and to make the voting record of congressmen available to the public at cost. Eight, the Hill-Mansfield bill to use revenues from offshore oil resources for defense and education. Where does my opponent stand on these measures? Where does he stand on offshore oil, a sales tax, and UMT? The people know where I stand, and the record will prove it. Where does my opponent stand on communism? He talks a great deal about it, but what has he done to stop this insidious danger? The ultimate aim of world communism is, as he should know, world conquest, world domination, and world slavery. As for me, I will never bow down to this atheistic ideology. And I will continue to support every measure designed to combat it, to stop it, and if necessary, to throw it back. I have backed up my words with action in voting for America's security. And I repeat, I have introduced legislation to outlaw this treasonable party once and for all. Where does my opponent stand on corruption? He talks about that too. But when the chips are down, what has he done? He has voted to keep postmasters, internal revenue collectors, and customs collectors on a patronage basis. And I voted to put them on a merit basis and take them off the patronage list. So far as corruption is concerned, there is no room for it in our government. One corrupt public official is one corrupt public official too many. I believe that it should be rooted out completely, and that anyone who has violated a public trust should be punished accordingly. I was one of those who urged Senator Kefauver to continue his investigation into crime in this country. And I also wrote to Senator Fulbright, asking him to continue his investigation of the RFC and other governmental agencies. I did so because I think corruption is a stench upon the name of America, and because I feel, I repeat, that every corrupt official must be punished and punished as quickly and as severely as possible. One of the other reasons I wrote to Fulbright was because of the fact that there was supposedly in the RFC and in the White House a congressional file of letters which purportedly put pressure upon the RFC to give favors to certain corporations. I believe that I had about 20 letters in the RFC relative to small corporations in Montana who had written to me asking for help from the government. As a matter of course, I sent them on to the RFC, but not one of my requests was ever granted. However, I wanted to see that my file and the files of other congressmen were uncovered and made available for the public. Where does my opponent stand on farm parity? Is he for 90%, 100%, or flexible parity? The farmers are entitled to know because they know from the record, the bills I have introduced, that I am for 100% parity. Don't be misled by words or promises. Go by the record. My opponent has a record. I have a record. No matter what we say, we cannot do anything about the records which we have made. And I hope that the people of Montana, in their wisdom, will examine closely the records of my opponent and me and judge on what we have accomplished and what we have done and on what we have not done. Judge us by the record because that is what counts. This is Mike Mansfield saying good night and so long.
You have just heard Mike Mansfield, candidate for the United States Senate, speaking in his own behalf. This has been a paid political broadcast over a statewide network. This is KPRK, your mutual station in Livingston, Montana, 1340 on your radio dial. Fulton Lewis Jr., usually heard at 7:15 to 7:30 each evening, will be heard at 8:30 tonight. Furs in all their splendor, coats and scarves, jackets, stoles, priced right at Spencer's, her favorite store in Livingston.